Welcome to the ProWrestling.net All Access Daily Podcast for Tuesday, September 5th, 2017. I am Jason Powell. Coming up after the break for non-members, my full review of the Labor Day edition of WWE Raw. Monday's WWE Raw was in Omaha, Nebraska at CenturyLink Center. It was the Labor Day edition, and perhaps more importantly, it was their last show without NFL competition for, I believe, the rest of the year, at least close to it. Certainly the next 16 weeks, Monday Night Football will return this coming Monday with a doubleheader game. And WWE, as far as what they advertised to combat that, well, nothing. They didn't advertise anything for next week, which is really strange because they'd been doing a better job of that. You know, we knew a match coming into this show in Jeff Hardy challenging for the Intercontinental Championship, and I don't remember when. I think they announced the cage match on Friday, so they didn't announce that a week out. But they've been doing a better job of that, I guess, is the overall point. And for some reason, going into the NFL doubleheader, they chose not to advertise anything specifically for next week. Now, there's nothing stopping them from doing that on the WWE website or all their social media accounts, and that certainly counts for something. I'd double down. I mean, I really don't know why you wouldn't want to advertise it directly to your Raw viewing audience and then do all of the things with social media and the website and all of that. Just kind of a strange call. I don't know if this means that they basically intend to roll over on doubleheader night and just kind of give a half-ass show and hope that people come back the next week, or I'm not sure how to read this, but I guess we'll have to wait and see what they do the rest of the week. As far as this episode goes, I thought it was another show that had, you know, it's a three-hour show, so I guess you're going to get this. I kind of felt like there was more misses than hits this week. We'll see once I kind of sit down to write the hit list, if I still feel that way, and maybe I'll feel differently as we work our way through this. It just felt a little slow tonight. It didn't feel like there was as much energy to the show as I think there has been in recent weeks. The absence of Brock Lesnar didn't help matters. John Cena and Roman Reigns had another verbal exchange, and it was fine, but it was, you know, mostly covering the same material they covered the week before. So it's certainly, you know, last week everyone was buzzing coming out of the show about it, where this week I don't think that's the case. I think their segment happened and people just kind of moved on. So they didn't really, they didn't capture that same energy they had last week, I guess is the way I would look at that segment. No title change on the show, despite having the Intercontinental Championship match, but they did set some things up for the No Mercy pay-per-view, which is looking like a big show. I mean, heck, it already did when you had two matches that I said I would have saved for WrestleMania with Brock Lesnar defending the championship against Braun Strowman, and then John Cena facing Roman Reigns. Well, now we know that the tag title match is official. Ambrose and Rollins defending against the team of Sheamus and Cesaro. There's going to be a women's four-way with Alexa Bliss defending against Sasha Banks, Nia Jax, and Emma. Emma's sneaking in there, so that's kind of cool. And then also, what is the other match they announced on this show? Oh, I know what it is. Neville is going to face the winner of a five-way elimination match that'll take place on 205 Live. And plus, I think it's, I don't know if they made it official, but we're getting Finn Balor and Bray Wyatt again. So, you know, the top two matches really make it, but I'm certainly not going to complain about that Raw tag title match. And I like the women's four-way more than the idea of going back to Sasha and Alexa. It's kind of hard to feel much excitement about Sasha right now when she wins the title and then loses it in her first title defense again, and then they had her lose again on Raw this week. But let's work our way through this. They opened up with a long recap of the John Cena and Roman Reigns angle with the contract signing from last week, and then our broadcast team was Michael Cole, Corey Graves, and the returning Booker T. If you recall last week, Jerry Lawler filled in for him due to the natural disaster in Houston, which is where Booker is from, but he was back this week. John Cena came out, and he played to the broadcast team a little bit, and this is at this point, they did acknowledge the return of Booker, and then Jason Jordan entered to really not much of a reaction at all, but he was there. They announced earlier in the day that John Cena would face Jason Jordan in the opening segment on Raw. They delivered on that, and it was John Cena beating Jason Jordan in 11 minutes and 40 seconds. He did so with the attitude adjustment. It's kind of funny, if you get a chance, if you maybe you didn't catch this live, go back and watch the difference between Cena's STF and the one that Jordan countered into. I mean, Cena's STF is, I mean, Steve Austin's called him on it before publicly. And I mean, in this case, it looked like Jordan's chin was resting on the mat. Cena had it applied so lightly. And then when Jordan applied it, I mean, he was wrenching on the neck of John Cena. So I got a kick out of that. I mean, the match was fine. It's just, I don't think people really are all that fired up about Jason Jordan. There's no reason to be. And I think the idea here is let's put him in the ring with John Cena. Let him have that, competitive match with Cena. Maybe that's going to win some people over. They also tried to tie it into John Cena's first match against Jason Jordan's storyline father, Kurt Angle. They showed footage of that and just tried to make that connection, which is a nice touch. But I don't really feel like Jordan gained much here. It's just, they're not. I like that he didn't win that Battle Royal last week because I felt like that would have been force feeding it too much. I mean, being in the ring with John Cena certainly means something. But I mean, this kind of went the way you would expect it to, with Jordan showing some life, but ultimately losing. And I think this is as much about establishing that, what Roman Reigns said about John Cena holding back talent, is it really true? I mean, that kind of a thing. But Jordan, like I say, he was fine in the ring. That's not the issue with Jordan. It's just the character is missing a lot. I mean, he's just as bland as it gets. He's like this 1970s super nice guy baby face. There's just nothing fun about him. And it's just what you see is what you get. Now they can change that. They may be working toward a heel turn. No real signs of it yet. But I just hope that something clicks here because what they're doing with him right now just isn't getting it done. But as Cena was celebrating, and he did help up Jordan afterward, Roman Reigns came out. So Jordan made his exit, and they went to a commercial break as Roman made his very slow walk to the ring. Coming out of the break, it was Reigns and Cena standing in the ring with mics in their hands, and Reigns said that he had one question for Cena. And the crowd booed Roman. And Roman said that if Cena is what he says he is, why does it take a 16-time champion over 20 minutes to beat a rookie? Now, I don't know if my online stopwatch is perfect by any means, but it's just a website that I go to use it just to give you guys a rough idea of how long these matches go. But yeah, it certainly was not over 20 minutes. John Cena didn't call him on it. It was, as I said, I had it at 11:40 for whatever it's worth, and I just kind of round up to. So if it's 11:37, it goes to 11:40. Close enough, right? But yeah, he said it took him over 20 minutes. Reigns said that if Cena's as good as he says he is, he would have beaten him right out of the get-go. And then Reigns said that Cena let Jordan and the fans believe in Jordan, and then he thrust him. And Reigns said that the alternative theory is that Cena isn't as good as he says he is, and is a lying, fake-ass little bitch. And that gets some oohs. And then John Cena welcomed Debbie Downer to Raw. And he said that he was disgusted by Roman's face. He said that they all saw what happened last week. And Roman should stay in his lane because that's not his strong suit. Cena said that Roman came out with his zipper open. And Roman said, I busted it, actually. And then he said, big dog. So, yeah, he's trying to tell you that he's got the big dog has big junk, apparently. All right. And then Cena said he was talking about his balls, but Roman Reigns doesn't have any. And then Reigns said that Cena would be looking for his balls. So, kind of like, I guess, trying to. Was he being borderline? Was that like a borderline homophobic comment, like accusing Cena of looking at his balls and kind of mocking him for it? I'll let you guys decide. Then we had Cena and Reigns. Cena saying that Reigns is going to get answers at No Mercy. Cena said that Reigns will either be beaten by a guy who will chop him down to size. And then Cena said Reigns is a conceited golden boy who needs to be taught a lesson in respect. And he said Jordan, Chad Gable, and even The Miz scratch and claw to get by. And he acknowledges that he despises The Miz, but he said he has to respect how he scratches and claws. He said, I don't respect you, Cena told Reigns. And then he said, I don't respect how you walk down here and call me a fake-ass little bitch. And Cena played to the crowd by saying that while Roman says he's the guy, the fans don't agree. Cena asked Reigns if he could see through his conceited and clouded brain or if he just has to beat some sense into him. Now we're talking, John. That's what Reigns said back to him. Do it. He encouraged Cena. Go ahead and do it on the spot. Asked the crowd if they wanted to see Cena beat his ass, and of course the crowd roared. And Reigns said this is Cena's moment to finally back up his big mouth. When Cena didn't get physical, Reigns told him he's all talk, and that's why I don't respect you. And then he left the ring while Cena was just kind of leaning against the rope, smirking. Like I say, last week's was much better. I don't think this is going to be a major talker for people coming out of the show. It was decent follow up. It certainly held my interest. They didn't really. I have a feeling that this may have peaked last week. I just don't know how much more there is. It's kind of basically it's the greatest hits of fans' social media complaints about both guys being worked into promos essentially, and they're going back and forth at one another. I don't know how many more complaints there are about John Cena. Or how many complaints there are about Roman Reigns, and I mean, I'm sure there are, but I don't know how many there is that WWE wants to really get into on the air, if you know what I'm saying. I also felt like this was them kind of responding to the belief that I think many, many people had, which is that Cena came out looking stronger last week. I did hear from some people who disagreed with that and felt Roman did. It's obviously subjective, but I feel like I came away feeling like Cena got the better jabs in out of the two. And so I think this was their way of trying to even the score with Cena not getting physical, that sort of thing. I don't know that you're going to change anyone's perception. They're going to, I guess, root for who they want to root for. I don't see them really doing anything to change that between now and the pay-per-view, and I don't think they want to. I think that's what they're looking for is the approach that, go ahead and cheer who you're going to cheer. I guess they should just be hopeful that, there is a hot atmosphere for this, and it's not just a bunch of people going, "We don't like either guy. We're just going to sit here." I don't think that'll be an issue, but we'll see. Then we had some hype for the cage match that we'd be getting, and as well as the IC title match, and they went to a commercial. They had Sheamus and Cesaro defeat Rhino and Heath Slater in 2:15. They had Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose sitting on commentary. A lot of the baby faces, and even Alexa Bliss. She was the only heel I noticed, but I may be forgetting someone or just didn't pay close enough of attention to notice that she was the one, along with the baby faces, wearing a Connor's Cure charity T-shirt. So they've got like limited edition T-shirts that they're selling, and I think they said 100% of the proceeds goes to the cause. So if that's something you're interested in, I'm sure you can find more details, but. But anyway, second match, it was Sheamus and Cesaro, as I mentioned, beating Rhino and Slater. 2:15 was the time on this, and they gave Rhino some offense. He cleaned house after taking a hot tag, but he ended up also running into a brogue kick from Sheamus, who pinned him. And then the broadcast team spoke from their table. This is where Booker thanked fans for their support and then said, "Hey, Houston's been down before." Kind of trying to give a positive message about what's going on in his hometown. And then Michael Cole noted that Mark Henry had actually been in the area helping out with the relief effort on Monday. And then Graves mentioned the name of the charity that they're recommending people offer donations to. Backstage, Renee Young interviewed the Hardys. Matt said it was a wonderful evening for a new Intercontinental Champion. Jeff talked about how he and Matt wrestle each match like it's their first and it could be their last. And he talked about how it would be pretty cool for his daughter to see him win the Intercontinental title. And he said he's either going to burn out in a blaze of glory or leave as the new Intercontinental Champion. And then Matt said if Miz Taraj tries to warp his brother's destiny, they will go down to a beautiful twist of fate. And they went to a commercial. The match they advertised repeatedly throughout SmackDown is Shinsuke Nakamura against Randy Orton in a number one contenders match. I don't think there was any mention of Natalya. I don't remember if she. I think she faces Carmella on the same show, but they put the focus. And I think in this case, wise move. I mean, there's some women's matches, obviously, you'd want a spotlight. But I don't think there's. I don't think they have a women's match on SmackDown that of any of the current feuds anyway that you would need to mention in the same breath along with Nakamura and Orton, which is a pretty big match to be giving away on television. And of course, you can join Jake Barnett for live coverage of that show, SmackDown, Tuesday nights as it airs on USA Network. In the third match of the evening, it was The Miz defeating Jeff Hardy in 13:05 to retain the Intercontinental Championship. They did a bit where one of the Miztourage members distracted the ref while the other got involved. Matt worked them both over. The referee ended up ejecting all three of them, Bo Dallas, Curtis Axel, and Matt Hardy. Kind of had to assume something was up when he left Maryse at ringside. She played some part in the match. She didn't, it wasn't like, massive interference, but what happened was that Jeff ended up getting Miz down. He went to the top rope for the Swanton finisher, and then And so he's up there, and she reaches in and starts kind of like shaking her husband's hand or wrist, whatever you'd say. And that caused him to roll out of the way and avoid the Swanton. A short time later, he ended up avoiding a twist of fate, encountering into a skull-crushing finale, and getting the win that way. And I like this win for the Miz a lot. I really do, because Jeff Hardy can absorb this. He's probably just going right back to the tag division. I don't know that we're going to get any sort of lengthy singles run from Jeff Hardy. It just doesn't seem like that's what they're working toward right now. So he can go back to the tag division, really lose nothing from this. Meanwhile, Miz, it's, yeah, she interfered briefly. It wasn't like she used a heel as a weapon, or it wasn't like she directly caused the finish here. And so this is about as clean of a win as you can get from Miz over, I guess, a former world champion in Jeff Hardy. This is something that's been missing from Miz's act on the Raw side. On SmackDown, I thought they were, was there a lot of cheating that would happen in his matches at certain, yeah, there were definitely times, but I also felt like they did a good job of establishing some in-ring credibility for Miz with the fan base when it came to, you started to see him as a guy that didn't always have to cheat to win. And since he's moved back to Raw, that's what it's felt like. He's all right. He's either going to lose, but chances are he's going to cheat and retain the championship or something like that. And this was a step toward giving him just a little bit more in-ring credibility with that fan base, where they're not always going to assume it's going to play out again as win, or I'm sorry, lose, or he cheats to retain the championship. So I like this. I don't think he's it made Miz or anything like that in terms of the fans suddenly completely turning the page and looking at him in a new light. But I think it was a step in that direction. I hope we see more of it because I like what they were doing with Miz on SmackDown before he was moved over to the Raw side. Then we get a little bit of a recap of the Raw Women's Championship situation with Alexa Bliss winning that last week and then Nia Jax attacking her. Cole hyped the advertised Bliss and Banks rematch for the Raw Women's Championship for No Mercy. Again, that match wouldn't stick. Kurt Angle was on his phone backstage when Nia Jax approached him and asked why Sasha gets a shot before she does. And Angle pointed out that she has a contractually obligated rematch. And he also said that what she did is not how you get opportunities. And she told him, hey, no one knows better than you that you create your own opportunity. And he actually agreed with that. And then she spoke about how it felt right when she held up that title last week. Enter Emma. I'm like, all right, this is kind of cool. But then she started talking about her new hashtag. Like, can Emma talk about something other than social media and hashtags? I don't really think this is clicking with anybody, but she's talented, and I want to see her do more. But this whole hashtag thing is just kind of makes you roll your eyes watching her. Angle ended up booking them to team together because I'm like, all right, are we going to get Nia squashing Emma again? No, he booked them to team together in a match against Bliss and Banks, and he said that if Alexa and Sasha won, the match would remain a singles match. However, if Jax and Emma won, they would both be added to the match and would become a four-way. So I like that. Gave you a little hook, not just a standard tag match. This one would have been kind of interesting even if there wasn't a stipulation, just because of Bliss and Sasha teaming together. But I guess they needed a good way to explain why they were teaming together, and I thought this covered it. So well done. Then we saw the cage hanging above the ring for the main event. And they showed us repeatedly footage of the ring collapsing during the last Big Show and Braun Strowman match. I think we saw every angle there is to see of it. And hey, it's a nice touch, just to kind of remind people of what happens when these super heavyweights go at it, and basically send that message that you never know what to expect, basically, when these two big guys end up in the same ring together. Then we got a little more of the broadcast team coming out of a break, hyping the cage match, and then we could see that there were at least three cruiserweights in the ring behind them. And we got a video package on the last time Strowman faced Show, so there are even more. And then we had some footage of the six-man tag main event from last week's 205 Live television show. It ended with Enzo Amore using the ropes, I think it was, for leverage, and basically cheating to get the win. And then he came out along with his partner. So it was the heels that were in that 205 Live match were already in the ring. Noam Dar, Tony Nese, Drew Gulak. No televised entrance for them. But Enzo came out with Grand Metalik and Cedric Alexander. Did some mic work. Really didn't seem to go anywhere. They labeled Gulak Captain Underpants. And closed with a soft bit. But the match itself was the babyface trio. Enzo, Grand Metalik, Cedric Alexander winning in 5 minutes. This time, Enzo poked Gulak in the eye while the referee was distracted and actually connected with his eat-to-beat finisher. He kind of botched it on last week's Raw, or at least I don't know if it was him, but it kind of looked like it was, but I don't know for sure, so we'll just kind of give him the benefit of the doubt, but it looked much better this time, and he gets the win. So I guess the idea now is that Enzo is just going to cheat to win, and I guess the fans are supposed to cheer him because he's doing it against heels. I guess Enzo's move to 205 Live has not made me any more excited about watching the show. I'm not an Enzo hater. I think, you know, promo-wise, some are better than others. This was what he did here tonight. Wasn't very good. He certainly has charisma, no doubt about that. But I just can't say that it's not even him. It's just, it's 205 Live. They're not doing anything with these guys. Neville was the champion for all but 6 days, and I like long-running champions, but it's kind of lame when I'm not excited about any of it, the potential challengers. They just don't do a good job with making you feel like anything else happening on that show matters. It's just like, all right, how do we get 3 shows on the air so we can get the hell out of here after SmackDown is over? That's what 205 Live continues to feel like. Then we had Sasha Banks getting ready for her match, and then Alexa entered the room, tried to play nice with her. Banks saw through it, but also basically agreed that she wanted to keep her singles match, and so it looked like they were going to be, I guess, as much on the same page as they could be going into their tag match later in the show. We saw Finn Balor walking backstage, and Graves said Balor was coming to the ring after the break, and that he did. He said, "This is Balor Club." And he talked about how the NXT and Universal Championships looked good around his waist. And he said the Intercontinental title also would have looked good on him if it wasn't for Bray Wyatt. And if you recall, Bray interfered in the Battle Royal and eliminated, or at least played a part. I don't remember if he tossed him over or what he did, but he certainly played a big part, if not outright eliminated him from the Battle Royal, which Bray Wyatt wasn't even an entrant in. He said, "You never truly beat someone like Bray Wyatt." He said that the next time Wyatt appears, he's going to be ready. And he said he's chosen his fate and he's not afraid. "I don't run from my demons because sometimes I become them." And then Balor said that they could continue to play games. And, well, that was Bray's cue because the Wyatt video flashed. And he appeared on the big screen, not in the ring. Talked about going hunting when he was a child. He was good at it, but he got bored. So he put the weapon down and used his hands instead. So is he trying to say he, I guess, killed animals with his bare hands? Which would make him, like, every serial killer movie or TV show I think I've ever seen, that's how they get their start. So I guess Bray Wyatt, future serial killer. They may want to check his, if he has like a cellar in his house or something. I just, the character, not the man playing him. Unless that story's true, and then it's very creepy. At any rate, he said that his bare hands judge them all. Referring to those poor animals. And he said that that choice defined him, and he knew what his purpose was. And he told Balor to define his legacy and make a choice. Balor said he's already made his choice, and Wyatt questioned if Balor will run like a scared rabbit when they meet at No Mercy. And that was the end of it. I just don't take what Bray Wyatt says seriously anymore. It's too bad. I really think he's a gifted talker. I don't think he always has the best material. And he's never had good quality writing, in my opinion. I mean, so the early days of the Wyatt family, or, you know, when they, through the time they feuded with the Shield, there was a lot of fun stuff in there. But how fun would it be if some of these, you know, go back and connect the dots, kind of a storyline, you actually got one involving Bray Wyatt, where he was cast as kind of the mastermind of some plot that played out. You don't get that. You know, they talk about him being this diabolical mastermind and all of this, you know, whatever, I don't know what wording they use, but that's kind of the vibe I get. That's what they want us to feel about his character, but it never really plays out that way. You know, he's a cult leader, but he doesn't really have any followers anymore. You know, he's lost Rowan and Harper, and but more importantly than all that, he just loses most of his matches. You know, he might win a match in a feud, and then he's just going to lose the next two, and they're going to move on. You know, I mean, that's just kind of the way it's been with him. And so I can't sit here and say that I'm really, I think, you know, I look forward to seeing what kind of match they can produce, I guess. But, like, the build of this, I'm just not anxious to see anything. It's just like, okay, whatever, it's another Wyatt and Balor match. We just saw the Demon beat him. I guess I was ready for him to move on, but I don't know if they know where to go next with either character right now. We got a Total Bellas teaser. The second season premiere coming up on Wednesday. Much to the delight, I'm sure, of Will Pruitt and certainly Johnny Fairplay. Johnny Fairplay loves Total Bellas. Cole mentioned the premiere and said, starring this young lady. I'm like, who the hell is this going to be? Alexa Bliss came out. She was wearing that Connor's Cure t-shirt, as I said. Cole hyped the charity drive, and this is where he did say that WWE will donate 100% of the proceeds to the cause. And then they went to a commercial after the other women made their entrance. And when they did, it was Nia Jax and Emma beating the team of Alexa and Sasha in 8:50 of television time. It was Emma tagging herself in as Nia was running the ropes to perform a leg drop. She hit the move, and then Emma stole the pin. So they're just trying to create some issues between Nia and Emma as well. Heading into this every woman for herself four-way match. I don't know that it was a great idea to have Sasha lose again coming off her win last week. Boy, she cooled off. You know, going into SummerSlam, it's like, yeah, they got something here. And then she won the title. It's like, well, that's cool. Maybe they got something, you know, maybe she's on a bit of a roll now, and they can kind of make her the face of the women's division for a while. And no. She lost last week, she lost this week, and she just feels ice cold again. After the match, Nia acted like she was cool with everything that Emma did, and she asked for a high five, and when Emma went for it, she stopped her and put her down to Samoan drop. So, yeah, Jack stands tall again. Backstage, Renee Young interviewed Braun Strowman about the main event. He openly questioned what Angle was thinking by putting him in a cage match against Big Show. That this might affect his title opportunity at No Mercy, but he's not complaining. But he did point out that he didn't see Angle booking Lesnar in a cage match before No Mercy. Strowman said he would use the match to send a message that wherever he goes, destruction follows. Then we got a shot of Ambrose and Rollins walking backstage. They crossed paths with Elias, who was strumming his guitar. Ambrose at first kind of looked at Rollins like, whatever, but then started kind of bobbing his head to the music a little bit. And they ended up hyping their match for after the break. That match turned out to be Rollins and Ambrose defeating the team of Luke Gallows and Karl Anderson in an on-title match in 11:50. Sheamus and Cesaro were at ringside for the entire match. They tried to get involved late to help Gallows and Anderson. It kind of backfired as I think it was Rollins. Rollins ran Anderson into Cesaro when he was on the apron. They collided, and so he was able to roll him up and pin him that way. And then after the match, Anderson and Gallows ended up knocking Sheamus and Cesaro to ringside. And there was an audible too sweet chant from some adult males in the crowd, for the former Bullet Club members, Anderson and Gallows. But then we had the two heel teams end up going at it again, and this time it was Sheamus and Cesaro quickly clearing them from the ring. And I'm just like, man, could any time Anderson and Gallows just like get any little just shred of momentum, they make sure to pull the rug out. And that's what happened here again. You know, it's like they lose the match, but then the crowd kind of likes them because they stood up for themselves with Sheamus and Cesaro. But Sheamus and Cesaro kick their asses quickly and right back to, you know, just nothing going on with Anderson and Gallo. It's too bad. I just continue to feel badly for those guys. It feels like WWE could have been doing a lot more with them. They've just, after that, you know, tease with them and AJ Styles, once they split them up, it just really hasn't been good at all. It's been too bad. It's just a shame. We got a video package on the Connor's Cure charity event. Stephanie McMahon was introducing various kids who had superhero gimmicks, and they did show the Raw crowd applauding this video, and then Michael Cole spoke about how proud WWE is to be part of this, and they once again listed the graphic. I don't have it handy, but I'm sure if you go to WWE website or do a search for Connor's Cure, something should pop right up if you're interested in those t-shirts to help out a good cause. Then Graves hyped the cage match main event. We got more footage of the ring collapsing, and he said the cage match was up next, and at this point I'm looking at the time going, there's no way. They're not going to give these guys, you know, it was like 20 minutes before the top of the hour, not even, you know, and so it was like a commercial break will eat up a little bit of time, but unless there's no overrun, and there always is, I don't know why, but there always is, there's no way they're not going right to this match. There must be a post-match angle or something else. Well, it turned out to be something else because we got Enzo, Cedric, and Metalik all celebrating their win backstage. Yes, all this time later, they were still celebrating. A meaningless six-man tag match victory on Raw. But Neville entered the scene. He was mocking them by clapping, and he announced that, "Hey, I just spoke with Kurt Angle. All three of you have qualified for a five-way elimination match. It'll take place on 205 Live. The winner is going to get a shot at No Mercy." So he said, "Friends one evening, foes the next." And so he's just trying to get under the skin of those three guys, and they were all kind of looking at one another. So, hey, they do. That's the one thing I can say. If there's one thing that kind of makes me go out of my way to watch a 205 Live main event, it's been their five-way eliminations. They do a good job with that. There have been a couple now. I think the first one was the really good one, if memory serves. But, yeah, there's not that the other one was bad, but they do a good job with those. And so that one I'll be paying a little more attention to. John Moore handles our coverage for that. And maybe I'll ask him to do All Access for Wednesday so that for those who don't see the show, those are always interesting. And so I think it might make for, again, if you didn't see the show, you can always read his review, but you can also listen to his audio review as well. The production crew was shown reinforcing the ring. I don't know what they actually do. I think they just kind of stick their hands under the apron and kind of act like they're doing things, because I don't know what they would have them do at this point. But anyhow, Michael Cole transitioned to referee John Cone. Yes, they actually mention a referee by name on WWE television. It's pretty rare that happens. The referees are right up there with their backstage interviewers, unless it's Renee Young. They will acknowledge her. Once in a while, you'll hear them say the name of Charlie Caruso, or one of the wrestlers will call her Charlie. But it's very rare that, Dasha Fuentes and, well, the other ones, because I can rarely remember their names because they just downplay those people so much. It's a shame. But it's one of those Vince McMahon things. I'd love to see a change where, give the referee some acknowledgement. I think the idea is we don't want to do anything to take the focus away from the wrestlers. I don't think knowing the referee's name is really going to take too much away from the wrestlers. That's just me. But he's made billions. I have not, so I guess I'm still going to complain about it. I think it's lame. I guess Cone basically just talked about the ring collapsing when he was the referee for their match, and how it's now doubly reinforced, but he said he doesn't know what to expect, and he just planned to stay out of the way again this time. Then Renee Young interviewed Big Show on the backstage interview set. He talked about how he's had a lot of big matches and faced every opponent conceivable, but he's never faced anyone as imposing as Braun Strowman. And he said that, granted, he's had more cage matches than Strowman has had actual matches. And he said he knows how brutal the cage can be on the body. He said Strowman's bones will break and he won't be able to stand. And that's when he's going to choke slam him straight to hell. He said that Strowman doesn't respect him. Show took exception to Strowman claiming that he's going to put him out to pasture. This must have been something he said, I don't know if it was an interview earlier or something on the website or something. I don't know. But at any rate, he said that Strowman would have to break him. And he said, in 23 years, there hasn't been one superstar big enough or bad enough to break me. And that was it. I liked it. Good promo from Show. And I liked the way they filled that time, because I was wondering what they're going to do. Now, that being said, I do think that both the referee interview and the Big Show interview, I don't understand why they wouldn't want those a little earlier in the show. Because if anyone's still watching at this point, I got to think they're hooked. They're sticking around for the Strowman and Big Show cage match. But what about earlier in the show when you're trying to really get viewers, sell them on your main event? They always have trouble keeping people for that third hour. I would think that if these, and you didn't have to be back-to-back either, but just doing, especially the Big Show promo, he put that on a little earlier with the goal of hooking people. I think it may have been effective, and I guess, we won't know what the numbers are until they come out, and this week they probably won't be out until Wednesday just because of the Labor Day holiday in the United States. If you're wondering why there was no all-access audio on Monday, that's why, just the Labor Day holiday in the U.S., but that'll probably caused the ratings to be delayed for both Raw and SmackDown this week. But still, I just think I think it's smarter just to try to hit that audience earlier with the hook like this rather than just, they consistently played the videos of the ring collapsing and all of that, but I think this was something that was unique. And, Show cutting a fiery promo, I liked it. I just really couldn't help but question, as much as I liked it, why it didn't air a little sooner. Then we had we got the official announcement of the five-way match for 205 Live. It'll be Brian Kendrick, Tony Nese, Enzo Amore, Grand Metalik, and Cedric Alexander. Again, it's an elimination match. The winner of it will then challenge Neville for the Cruiserweight Championship at the No Mercy pay-per-view. And then it was main event time, and it was Braun Strowman defeating Big Show in a cage match in 16 minutes and 55 seconds. They gave these guys plenty of time, and they did a good job with it. Yeah, I mean, it's the super heavyweights, and so naturally it's going to be a little slower paced than your average match, especially when they start to get a little winded. But I thought they did a great job, you watch a heavyweight title fight in boxing, and you're going to see some of that if it's a long fight, too. Now, okay, I shouldn't say that because I haven't watched a heavyweight title fight in many years, but certainly when I was watching, you'd start to see that. They'd start to lumber a little bit. You know, they'd get winded a little more than your middleweight champion would, for instance. And so I think it's just natural, and it didn't bother me at all that they were moving at a pretty slow pace by the end. It just kind of made what they were doing seem more impactful, and I thought they did a really good job with it. It was fun. The finish to this, they both were crotched on the top rope. I don't know how Strowman was crotched because he didn't really land the same way that you would think of when somebody's crotched on the top rope, but at any rate, they get to the late point in the match. Show goes up to the top rope. Strowman cuts him off again, catches him with a punch to the gut, and then superplexed him. And you could see the fans just thinking, this is it. The ring's going to collapse. I had a reader on Twitter point out that they didn't have the casing around the ring posts, and he was pretty sure that the ring was going to collapse. It's like, hey, good guess. But if you've noticed, when they do a cage match, those cages weren't designed for those new the video ring posts that they have, the casing that they have for those videos. I don't know what the right terminology on it is, but if they're going to do a cage match, I think there's another match they do too, where they remove those. They either don't have them at the start of the show, and I guess I paid so little attention to them that they've just become so common to me that when he pointed out they were gone, I immediately noted that, yeah, they don't have them there for cage match. So I don't know if they were there at the beginning of the show and I just missed it, or if they took them down going into the cage match, but that's all it is. I don't know if they'll redo the cages at some point, or if it's just like, who cares? I wouldn't worry about it if I were them. I don't miss the casing when it's gone, and I can't even say that I care about it. It was cool the first time I saw it, maybe the first couple times, and now it's just like part of the set. It just kind of loses appeal. It's not a turnoff, but it doesn't, I don't really know that it does much for me personally. If you feel differently, you do. But anyway, back to the match. You get the superplex, no ring collapse, and Cole said they reinforced it twice. And he said, and it worked. And then Strowman got to his feet. He let out a big primal scream, and then he scooped up Big Show and power slammed him and ended up getting the 3 count. So Strowman goes over that way. I was entertained by it. And then after the match, Strowman took the mic and asked the crowd if they saw what he did to the so-called giant. And he asked what they think he will do to the beast at No Mercy. And he said, Brock Lesnar, at No Mercy, this is your future, and mine is becoming the new Universal Champion. Okay promo. But then he teased leaving and stopped, and he looked back at Show and got to him, and Show was on his knees at this point, and Show starts throwing like the lightest punches of all time, just to show, he's trying to emphasize how weary he is. And Strowman looked at him, and this is off mic, but you could hear him say it, you're out to the pasture, old man. And he scooped up Show and power slammed him, not into the ring, through one of the cage panels. It was great. The panel collapses and lands on its side at ringside. Looked like Show took a very safe bump where he lands kind of in the middle of the cage, which has some give to it. Now we'll talk about a potential injury in a second, but no, he looked like he took a very nice safe bump. The only concern you have there is like the edge of the ring. There's part of the cage that lands on that too, but he was selling a hip. And I did watch it a couple of times again, just saw it pop up on Twitter. Somebody had the video footage of it. And so I watched it again. I didn't see anything with his hip landing on the apron. Now, is it possible just from what he did? It was hurt, I guess. And I say that because he was wincing, holding on to his hip in pain as the referees checked on him. Strowman went to the stage, let out another big primal scream, and that's how the show ended. Our own Jake Barnett, .net staffer Jake Barnett, he noted on Twitter that there were rumors of Show potentially having hip surgery of some kind. And it was, I don't remember it. I don't know if it's something I'm forgetting or if there's, if it's, I don't know where Jake got it from, but if, and so he thought maybe it wasn't a case of show necessarily aggravating that as much as he was selling it. So something to keep in mind. I'm just not sure. But yeah, I didn't see anything from that bump that would make me, you know, there's, you know, can an injury occur without it being obvious when you watch a video back? Sure. But in this case, there wasn't anything where it's like, ah, that's where he did it. So he may have just been selling completely. But I just wanted to point that out because he was doing an effective job of selling, if nothing else. But a cool match, a big spot at the end of the show. And, you know, I think they did the ring collapse bit, and I think they needed something. As much as they put over the ring collapsing footage and all of that, I think fans would have been disappointed if it was just kind of a straightforward power slam that did end Big Show. So I think they were expecting something a little sexier, and they got it with the cage collapsing segment. Not collapsing, but the section of it did. It was a cool spot. The other cool moment of this, too, was Big Show going to the top rope and performing an elbow drop. Booker T kind of foreshadowed, he talked about how Show did this during the first year of his career and questioned whether he would do it again, and then he did it. I don't know that I needed Booker reminding us of that. I think it might have been better just to kind of leave it alone and let it play out, and then, you know, you can give that commentary after the fact. But, at least it felt like Booker contributed something there. It was just a cool super heavyweight match. Again, slow-paced. That pacing may not be for everyone, especially if you're a fan of the cruiserweight, high-flying style. So be it, but I really can appreciate both, and I enjoyed this. I thought it was well done, and I'm guessing that it was done to write out Show for a while, given all the talk about putting him out to pasture. And Strowman, of course, you had to assume he was going to win heading into that No Mercy title match, and so it's another feather in his cap. But that is going to do it for today, everybody. Thank you so much for listening. Please take a moment and subscribe to our daily podcast. Rate and review us on iTunes, Stitcher, anywhere that allows you to do so. That really helps us out. Plus, you're helping spread the word about the podcast and ProWrestling.net, and that is greatly appreciated. As I mentioned earlier, I think I will ask John Moore to do the 205 Live audio review for you guys here on the All Access side on Wednesday. You'll probably hear from me at some point later in the week, but the .net members most definitely will, as I'll be doing their Q&A audio show. Normally, it's on Mondays, pushed back this week due to Labor Day as well. And then, of course, .net Weekly is still to come. My audio review of the Global Force show that goes up on Fridays. There's a chance you guys will hear it here on the All Access side, but I'm not quite sure how that's going to go yet. But thank you so much for listening, and be sure to check out ProWrestling.net. Follow me online at ProWrestlingNet. Just leave the dot out of that one, and I will talk to you again very soon. Take care.